You are listening to KKUP
Behind Closed Eyelids,
Cupertino, 91.5 FM, and as you may have guessed, it's time for the Vibrational Voyage program. This week on the Vibrational Voyage, we're very fortunate to have another live guest, one that you've heard before. If you're a regular listener at all, to Tuesday night at 11 p.m. Tonight, we've got Tiger Windwalker here, and he's fresh back. Just returned tonight from an excursion to the Big Island. So we've got the good fortune to have Tiger here with us tonight. And we're going to be kind of delving into what's going on with the celestial weather, what's happening with our the dynamics of our insides and our outsides. So thank you for tuning in and listening here to KKUP Cupertino 91.5 FM. Thanks for listening to the Vibrational Voyage program. Tiger, wonderful to have you here. Thank you for coming tonight.
Well, aloha, and aloha to the listening audience, and I'm happy to be back, and here you guys have had to put up with a lot of rain here in the last month.
That's right. We've had quite a variety of all kinds of things going on with the weather, and it's been interesting because as you love to keep track of what's going on with the weather in a deeper sense, we've certainly had a good mix of things occurring. It's interesting because 2010 right off seems to be a year where things are happening. I mean, at 2009 and 2008 to some degree to me seems to have been years where things were kind of opening up, and now we have things that are kind of taking form. We have things shaking out from what we've been, almost like connections and readiness has been prepared, and now things are starting to connect and to some degree ignite, where we're having a certain amount of that. So you've been experiencing some of that. What's your take so far on 2010?
Well, this latest trip that I had to Hawaii, which was I thought it was going to be somewhat similar to past journeys that I've had there. Mm-hmm. And I was quite surprised this time for me that I was totally, reduced to a kind of a quivering mass of nerves because my back went out.
Oh, yeah.
When I got there. So I spent, normally what I would do is spend a lot of time in the ocean swimming, because I'm a swimmer, snorkeler, diver, boogie boarder. And I did relatively little of that because I was convalescing from having my back go out and having this acute case of sciatica. So what I've learned in the past, because I have a mystical orientation, I've learned to recognize when the landscape shifts dramatically and suddenly I'm confronted with basically circumstances that are similar to a vision quest. So to say the least, it got my attention, and I spent a lot of time laid out flat on my back just having to watch and be with my experience. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens in a vision quest. Especially when you have a space and vision quest that's kind of delineated in a circle, maybe delineated with tobacco ties or with sage or something like that, a rather small space. This time it happened to be a bed. And for me, so whenever that happens, whenever I have such a profound experience like that or a challenge, which I call vision quests are very challenging, but then, you know, people also have near-death experiences and or beloveds die, or, you know, you lose your job, or you break up with somebody. These are all opportunities in my book to have a vision quest and have an opportunity to turn within. A lot of what my new book is about, Walk in Beauty, is being able to harvest that subjective time that we need. And after this experience that I've had, I definitely believe that this is a very fruitful moment for us, for all of us, because, you know, if I just told you that this was my experience, and everybody said, well, that's his experience, right? Oh, well, it's my experience. But for me, it's different, because what I've done is I've offered myself on the altar to be a servant to, you know, the Great Spirit and to Mother Earth. And when somebody does that, well, however you call that, living a life of spiritual life devoted towards service, okay, and honoring the greater power, you know, asking for guidance, asking to be prepared, since I'm a flute player, asking the Great Spirit to play me, then I realize that there's a certain responsibility there that I need to bring myself up to a level of attunement that is appropriate to the message that needs to be communicated. So I see this as a challenge for me to perhaps again put my finger on the pulse and be able to give some kind of indication of the psychic, emotional, and objective territory that we're traversing at this time. Maybe we could have a little jump on it a bit. Isn't that human? Isn't that human? You know, who likes to just totally be surprised? And don't you like to learn from your mistakes, or perhaps from your blindness or your, you know, stubbornness? Don't we all appreciate learning and seeing that, you know, our growth comes out of these pulses, so to speak, of being blind, and then because of the frictions of life and the hard knocks and the pain, we have these instances where we wake up. Isn't that the way it is? You know, perhaps we would wish that it wasn't that way. I know I'd like to say that the title of my book is a good prescription, Walk in Beauty. I got there from falling down a lot of times, and I got there from relationship breakups, and I got there from the trauma of my childhood and the healing journey that I took. So, you know, perhaps it's what happens is as we traverse the terrain and we get bruised and beaten, and it's just, you know, this is what the third dimension's like. It's what it's like here on Earth. But then we have to look at the things that sustain us too. And the just incredible love of our friends and our allies and the beauty that's around. And if we can open up to that and engender trust and faith in our hearts, we can make the journey and we can be successful. We can be beings of grace and wisdom and clarity and peace and joy. These are, some people would say that, oh yeah, Tiger, you're from the 60s, you know, and that's all finished. It's not finished. What we did is we articulated questions back in the 60s, and we expect you of the current epoch to answer the questions. You. And that includes you, the listening audience. We expect you to do your homework, and we're still waiting on answers. And perhaps, you know, the questions are out there for the politicians, for the leaders, for the priests. And in my book, you don't get to duck the questions. So anyway, I feel like I have, because I volunteer myself on the altar, which means, you know, I might get doubly bruised. And, you know, I might be doubly called to task for all my faux pas and my lingering egotistical ways that I still would like to maybe sometimes be able to put my finger on the pulse a little bit and hope that that isn't something that can help people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my job. And if I can become inspirational in some way through my poetry or my music or just telling my story, that's fine. But just having a little bit, having that edge, just having an indication of what is necessary, then often, you know what tools to bring to the task. I think that's just human.
Well, you were mentioning questions that came up, questions that you found, questions that you asked, and questions that kind of reverberate to us back from that place where we stood 40 years ago. What are some of those questions that resonate for you from that time?
I would say that one of the big questions is, asked in a personal way, how am I to participate in a society in such a way that as I discover my talents, my gifts, and my predilections, that I can feel the support of the greater society, my community, my family, my beloveds, so that I can make the greatest expression, the greatest demonstration of my of actualizing my potential. Actualizing one's potential was Abraham Maslow's. That was his highest place you could go on his hierarchy, self-actualization. Self-actualization that is supported by a community of peers and friends is a definition of the Aquarian age. So the problem gets to be that as we are young ones, we experience a spate, a gauntlet that we have to run through called the socialization process, conditioning. And not to make our parents wrong or anybody else, but, you know, we become the brunt of the traditional forces that basically have held sway in the development of society. And, what happens there is that we tend to inherit the foibles of our parents, or we tend to become hamstrung by the conditioning process, the expectations that are laid on us from our community, our church, from our blood family. And at some point, there, as you are in touch with your own spirit, there is a real desire to transcend that.
So how should I live beyond what my programming, what my conditioning, what the confines of what my family and my society might dictate to me?
Okay, and so first, the first thing here is we're talking about awareness. Because literally, a lot of people don't even know what they feel about things.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens because we learned early on to repress certain impulses, certain expressions that were deemed off color or out of bounds by the greater society. In other words, we learned to, shut up. Okay. And the sum total of those repressive experiences produces repressed people.
Mm.
Okay. And what happens is that we have our gem essence gets cloudy. So if you can imagine you're looking into a multifaceted gem, it could be a ruby, an emerald, whatever color you want, and amethyst, citrine. What you imagine is that there's a crystalline clarity and perfection when you look into that multifaceted gem, which mm-hmm. I think that's what we are. We're all very multifaceted. We have many, many talents as individuals and as spiritual beings. But what happens is that gets clouded so that we lose the clarity, which is to say we become out of touch. Mm-hmm. We become out of touch with what's really going on.
Yeah.
And since there is so much futurizing in the society, we project our energy and our sovereignty outside of ourselves and begin to march to the tune of another drummer, which is not of our own. And, you know, everybody tells us that's what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to listen to this guy and you got to go and, you know, take these courses and you got to go to this university and you have to accept this line. You know, you have got to go to, you know, get a job. And, you know, everybody mortgages their lives and gives up their own sovereignty and through a process that causes them to futurize. So part of the human psyche is futurizing and projecting. The other part's disconnected from the deep, essential core of the subconscious memory and what needs attending there, the murkiness that casts shadows and turbidity over that gem essence. So what happens is most of us don't really live in the present.
What's interesting that in the middle of the 60s, something that you and I have discussed many times, and it's happening right now still, we're at the end of it. It went from 65 to 67, and it was a celestial event, Saturn in opposition to Uranus. Happens about every 45 years. And we're going through that right now. And that's highly resonant with what you're talking about. There's the way that the expectations of society and the structure that's both outside us and inside us, the rails that our life seems to run on, and that is somehow trying to be balanced against this sense of intuitive inner direction and the sense of our sovereignty and our own sense of direction and our freedom. Those two are trying to balance themselves. And in the 60s, we had an expression of that. And you seem to be really kind of resonating with that, what I'm picking up on. And that's resonant right now, too. It's interesting. And the first exact hit, there's five hits for this, five times that the opposition is exact. The very first one was on November 4th, 2008, which just so happened to be the election day for Barack Obama. And one thing that was really interesting is right as Uranus went over our heads in California, right at that moment was the moment that Barack Obama's opponent in the election, Senator McCain, he conceded right as Uranus was at the midheaven over California. So it was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Saturn was beneath us, Uranus was right overhead, and that's the moment that we got our new president. And that influence is still kind of unfolding. We have that going on right now, that Saturn-Uranus opposition.
Yes.
And you were saying just a minute ago about how, you know, we have that the murkiness that we have to kind of sort out. That's kind of, it's both inside us and around us as well. And we've had during this last year, all through 2009, we had this Jupiter, Neptune, and Chiron all together. And on New Year's Eve was, right about New Year's Eve, I think it was exact, was the last exact alignment of Jupiter and Neptune.
Mm-hmm.
And as we speak, Jupiter is speeding its way up to Uranus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to join Uranus in opposition to Saturn. So we had this kind of Jupiter, the adventure of what consciousness is trying to show us. And some of what it showed us was that murkiness. That's kind of a Neptunian quality. And we had that going on last year.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the murkiness, it seems like it was showing us some of the greater expanse, you know, greater potentials, greater possibilities as well during 2009. Some of those wider territories and dimensions. And that now is with us, and it's kind of fueling where we're at, because we're about to enter into a new phase of this adventure with what's coming here.
Mm-hmm.
Now is Jupiter's going to jump up and conjoin Uranus, and it's going to happen right as the last Saturn-Uranus opposition is occurring. So this dynamic of karma and structure, stricture, and freedom, this balance is working itself out. Jupiter's going to come and conjoin Uranus just as this last element of that dance is unfolding. So I'm kind of wondering what you might feel about what's right with us now from your experience so far with what's applying here, what's taking shape in those dimensions. What do you feel?
Well, there's many different levels of analysis here. And I know some people live so close to themselves, personally speaking, they want to know personally what's going on. And then at a macro level, so I call that the micro level or personal level. There could be the subconscious, subjective and subconscious level. If you're laying on a bed day after day, just tracking your pain, it's a very subjective place to be. If you lose your job and you've lost your health care and you've lost your retirement and your pension and half your 401k goes out, that's you could be in the same place, you see. But I think as what's important in my book is to embrace the moment, because that's where our power is. We reclaim our power by updating ourselves through that wounded place that we've been carrying, through the conditioning that we've brought forward that isn't really us, but it's an overlay, a superimposition on us by parents and patriarchs and stuff from our past and schools, updating ourselves to bring ourselves into the moment is a way to reclaim our integrity and our dignity at the same time as we downgrade and withdraw the energy that we put into projections and futurizing. From that end, we reclaim somewhat of our soul and our capacity to be attentive. So what the situation that we have right now on one level is that we're so preoccupied with the current party line or storyline that the mass media would give us, okay, that we really don't know. We can't really appreciate the power of the moment insofar as we are attached to any particular storyline, any particular projection, our own desires that fuel our futurizing can also take us out of that. So what I know is for me, so I'll just bring it back to me now. When I was laying on this bed, which was like, felt like a hospice, the nature of the nerve spasms that I was getting was that I had two choices. I could stand or I could lay flat on my back. That was it. Those were the only two positions that I had. So that meant, since I sleep on my side and that was taken away, if that option was taken away, I spent a lot of time sleepless and awake at night. This is also one reason I knew this was a vision quest, because this is what happens in vision quests. And all I could do is track my experience. Now, what I had, the core of my experience, was this 230,000 volt nerve that went from my lower back down my left leg all the way down to the bottom. And basically that was the core of my experience. And I had to work with that. So the first thing is, being knocked off your feet is very humbling and immediately catapults one back to the present moment and experience. And then being in the present moment, I would be asking my question, okay, I was saying, well, look, is there any space along this continuum of this nerve and the fuses that seem to get lit to ignite the explosive reaction? Is there any continuum? Is there any space in here that I can operate? Is there some space that I can work with, maybe to expand upon it or through an acute analysis of what's happening? Is there some space there where I could have some relief? Is there a possibility that I would be able to manage and work with the situation such that I could get over on my side so that I could sleep. Mm-hmm. And those were, at first, that was out of the question because I thought every time I moved, I would just trigger this detonation, this 230,000-volt experience. So I kind of backed off from that. Mm-hmm. But there was a part of me that wanted to engage what was real, what was happening in the moment. And at some point, that need of sleep was such that I was willing to try it out and to work with the impulses and to work with the trigger mechanisms to see if I couldn't open up a space. And I did it. I did do it. So in the meantime, I'm getting chiropractic and all that. You're going to do anything, folks. Once you've had the shock treatment, the ultimate shock treatment, you'd do anything to get over it. So in a sense, that is a metaphor. That's a parallel. And what I see coming, I'll just give you basically my take, and then we can either fly with this or what. I think it's important right now that many of us need to lighten up the load. Lighten up the load that we're carrying, even on a level of materialistically. Most of us have too much stuff. And I noticed that the stuff that I had to get moved a lot, packed up, loaded up, unloaded, different places that I had to go, and I couldn't help, so my wife had to do it. And that's how I became really aware of how heavy we are, you know. And that heaviness in itself keeps us from being attuned and open and available to experience. If we were to put a high value on listening, for instance, when the tsunami happened and I got evacuated, the tsunami, there was a tsunami alert in Hawaii, and I was woken up at 5:30 in the morning, and I remember standing at the guard saying, you know, I'm sorry, people, we got an 8.8 earthquake in Chile, and you have 15 minutes to get up and gather your personal items and head to higher ground. And I remember, you know, getting out. I was at a campground up on the ocean. Well, they had to evacuate, so we're on the ocean. So I'm standing up, but you're getting out of the tent. I'm standing up and I'm yelling to my wife, Laura, I can't move, because I couldn't. My leg all seized up, and it was like, you know, having to kickstart everything. It took like 15 minutes to get it kickstarted. So, and I'm usually a very vibrant physical person, and here I'm, you know, not being able to do it. And she says, you got to. So anyway, we had to grab all this stuff, and it's 5:30. It's dark still, you know, and this tsunami is coming across. Nobody knew what was going to happen.
Right.
So, but what I'm saying is, like, for the folks in Chile, a lot of people died. People got killed in the tsunami. Mm-hmm. They had a tsunami there. People got killed. Mm-hmm. What they did was the earthquake hit. They went out of town, and in about an hour later, they thought it was all clear, and they came back into town, and they got hit by the waves.
Wow.
And the waves just, you know, these were like 20-foot-high waves that just brought cargo container vessels into smash houses down and all debris and everything and just cut everybody up. And then it sucked everybody out into the ocean. Okay. Now, what I'm saying is that I'm suggesting that the kind of changes that we're looking at with Uranus opposition Saturn, which is a very much a destabilizing influence, that the normalcy is going to be disrupted, the kind of functioning of institutions is prone to disruption, and because Uranus is a sign of instantaneous and quick lightning-like change, we're going to have more and more experiences where things just happen and we have to respond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Pluto, we haven't talked about Pluto yet, but coming up with the Grand Cross in July.
Summer solstice.
The Grand Cross there, the other player will be Pluto, which is, like Shiva. It's the planet that basically is the destroyer, and also the god of the underworld. So when you throw Pluto into this and squaring both Saturn and squaring Uranus, you're going to have precipitous change without warning that just destroys the capacity to respond in a normal way. So that institutions get undermined, normal responses get undermined, the normal ebb and flow of life gets undermined and destroyed. And that's what we're looking at. I wouldn't be surprised. And if you see this happen, you're going to know that Pluto has now arrived. The Ring of Fire, right now the Ring of Fire is shaking, but we haven't had any volcanoes going off. But as soon as we start seeing some volcanoes go off, mm-hmm. along with the earthquakes, then you know that Pluto, the god of the underworld, is outdoing his work, okay?
Well, and Pluto's moving through the early degrees of Capricorn, mm-hmm. which astrologically mm-hmm. kind of signifies just what you're saying, it even intensifies it, that Pluto, it's there in Saturn's sign, so it's shaking up the structure. It's bringing yes. its intensity in there. Now, that shakeup isn't meant just solely for the purpose of shaking things up, destroying things. Of course, it's the life force of the universe, the life force of the planet. It's our life force. So when that energy moves in a way that works to kind of realign things, of course it's going to
yes.
mess with the way things are currently set up. But it's working to take things into
yes.
a better condition, a more resonant, fruitful, vibrant condition, potentially.
Change always challenges structure and the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you put Pluto in there, then you're going to have destructive change will challenge the status quo. But here's the point that I want to make, though, is this. As we come into the moment, we reclaim our sovereignty, we reclaim our power to do anything, then we also have our capacity then to listen. And listening is really important because you measure the quality of your response on the quality of your deep listening.
Mm-hmm.
And, what we want is authentic listening and authentic response. And it may not be the party line or what the authorities tell you to do. It has to come from that place that's deep inside each and every one of us. So lightening up, and I was going to go to the next part of that, simplifying our lives, not having so many things going on, again, which is more on the projection end of it. For me, I realize that I've been caretaking several different properties. They're hundreds of miles apart, and also trying to finish a book, and I just had too much stuff going, and I've been in a state of tension.
Mm.
So when an individual is in a state of
tension.
Tension, basically, your muscles are contracted. You're not available.
Mm-hmm.
You're not available. Listening and readiness and availability comes better in a relaxed state.
Well, what you were saying a few minutes ago about what especially a great challenge brings us to, it brings us to the place where our awareness is focused on what's going on right now. And it's funny because you were saying about the tension that you were in. And the thing that strikes me with that is that a tension is what is the thing that then can help us. That's our leg up. If we become aware of what we're doing with our life, with our energy, and give that attention, to whatever is going on, even if it's tension, even if it's stress, even if it's struggle, even if it's great despair. Bringing the, I don't know, what's attention to me, I've come up with a metaphor that seems to work. It's the opposable thumb of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have that. We have that. And what does that thumb do for us? Well, in a material world, our thumb allows us to manipulate reality. Well, I think attention is akin to that. It's that basic, that profound. When we realize what it is, what we've got, and how we can use it, then we don't have to be struggling. We don't have to be the victim of what appears to be going on. We've got some options. So you brought your poems with you tonight. Mm-hmm. There's one other thing I got to say before I forget.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Right now, although Pluto's at about 5 degrees, almost 5.5 degrees of Capricorn, measured from a tropical astrology point of view, it's very interesting because of Pluto's angle in the sky, which is offset from the ecliptic. So think of the orbit of the Earth and the other planets around the sun as a disc or a hula hoop. Well, Pluto's hula hoop is askew to the main hula hoop, the main, what we call the ecliptic.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, because of Pluto's alignment, it is exactly, this year, Pluto is exactly aligning itself. It's crossing the center point of the galaxy, not just the center. We've had the closest approach of Pluto to the center point, but it's crossing the galactic equator this year because of its angle. Although it's at 5 degrees of Capricorn, you have to kind of look at this. If you can see the whole three-dimensional layout, it helps quite a bit. But Pluto's physical alignment right now of its where it is in its orbit, it's crossing the very center line of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's several degrees above the center point as we measure it. But it's very interesting because this year, while all this stuff is happening, Pluto happens to be just as this is developing right now, and it'll occur. I think it's already occurred once, and it's backed up, and it's occurring the second time now. And then in the late summer, early fall, it'll be crossing through there yet again. So you've got something that you're ready to lay on us here.
Yeah, I have a poem that I think it talks about it's a metaphor for a life that's working.
Sorry, I cut you there for a second.
Yeah. And so I want to read that. And let's see, what else there? I just wanted to finish up maybe on a thought or two about... you know, being a good listener and, you know, there's a place too where once you start shedding some of the weight and the burden that you're carrying, reclaiming your life a little bit. Now, if the God of the underworld starts erupting inside you, then that means that your collective, the collectivity of your subconscious mind may become suddenly turbulent and may be asking on an emotional and psychic level for your attention also. These are areas where I think that are ripe for healing work. And then as we bring back, as we reclaim our energy from the expectations of others and their recommendations, and futurizing and projection out in temporarily, what happens is this coming back is a profound opportunity of reclamation and dignity for ourselves, and the listening is easier. And the other thing too is that when you're involved in a process like that in a conscious way, you can talk about values clarification. So, you know, a shift. And the recession has actually set it up for us. because, you know, you go, okay, no more manufacturing in the company. So now a guy who is making trucks, he's got to recreate himself.
Hmm.
Okay. But if you only have, like for me, I've been a construction guy. I'm college educated, but I've been in construction all my life.
Mm-hmm.
And now what I'm looking at is that, you know, I can't continue to do that because of the wear and tear. Well, there are tens of thousands of fellows like me in the same boat.
Mm.
But how do, could, how many of them could really say, you know, I really need to rethink this and maybe consider recreating myself?
Mm.
Because of my age and the circumstances and my health and the impacts of this and that, and perhaps just, you know, my own temperament or the urgings that arise from inside for expression of other deep-seated aspects of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
The energy wants to move. Other dimensions of ourselves want to have attention and be polished and come into a crystalline clarity. So it, what all this stuff is happening for us is to create an environment for a lot of courageous action,
hmm.
you know, a courageous action, and a flowing from a more authentic spot, or more authentic place of beingness and creativity. And when we are in alignment with that, it is said that we can act in accordance with our passion, that we can live our passion. Who is your guy that you like who used to talk about live your passion?
Oh, yeah, Campbell.
Yeah, Joseph Campbell talked about living your passion. And I think there's some folks that have no inkling of what that is,
yeah,
what the passion is.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth a go. I think as the true spirit of us as explorers and adventurers, it's worth a go to find that thing that will mobilize our passion and start to correct the way what we have valued, where we put our sense of value into, and start to maybe take a look at that and reevaluate and bring things home for a while and see, well, what is it that I want to carry, you know? I mean, the poem I'm going to read to you is about traversing a river. But, you know, how much stuff can you put in a canoe? You know, you're going to take that kind of journey, you know. You don't want to put so much stuff in there. You swamp yourself, you know. You'll sink, and that will be the end of the journey, you right. know. So that's what I'm the thing that we're laying there in bed, stretched out in a very unnatural position for me, flat on my back. And, you know, there's all these metaphors. Well, he was knocked flat on his back. Well, now I know what that is. Being knocked flat on your back. And what can you do? You just have to have a confront with yourself, you know, and you have to come back into the moment. There's no escaping it, you know. And so that's, basically, that's my suggestion is my hint for folks. The hint for the week is maybe start looking at how you can lighten up and how you can simplify, with the emphasis being, the goal being toward being more responsive, being a better listener about what's coming up in your life. When you draw it from the top down, we call it intuition. When you bring it from the bottom up, it's called your gut level feeling for life and your circumstances. And we want those things to converge somewhere in the solar plexus or in the heart, somewhere around that area, the center of our being, not spun off to some periphery called like the head. That's where a lot of us get stuck, especially here in Silicon Valley, right? A lot of people are just stuck in the head. And they're disconnected from their gut level feeling. You ask them, well, what do you feel about things? Well, I don't know what I feel. I don't know. That's sad. I mean, we're the leading edge of the evolutionary vanguard of creation on this planet, and people say, I don't know what I feel. That's a sad commentary. But let me read you this poem here, because I think it's can put things into perspective. And It's called the Sacred River. Who knows the majesty of the Sacred River? To watch it, to consider it, to explain it, this is one thing. But to enter it, to be embraced by it, to be swept along by it, this is an entirely different matter. And what of the impulse to enter? What is the attraction? Unless we are sacred rivers ourselves, composed of the same dynamics, and here is the immutable principle written across all water, all rivers, return to the source. And like the water, which always responds toward the lowest point, I feel a pull in my fluid core toward some ineffable destination. As I enter the river, I can feel it gather me and carry me. The voyage has begun. The current is taking me home, but I can't see around the next bend. The river twists and writhes like a giant liquid snake, full of surprises. To make this journey, I too must bend. I must trust that around the next bend, the river continues, and that I will find my way through. I have my boat, and within the banks of the river, I move. I position myself. I explore. I can even stop. Maybe I'll pull up on a sandy beach and lie in the sun for a while, listening to the wondrous sounds of the wind, the water, and the birds. Or maybe I'll slip over the side of the boat in midstream and just float along with the current, feeling the immense yet cradling power of moving water. More and more, I am becoming one with this flow. And the river is insistent. Nothing can stop it. It will find a way through, even if it must call upon the heavens to send its strength through a deluge of rain. It will become full, swollen, and tempestuous, and not even solid rock can block its way. And I am like this too, determined to overcome all obstacles in my way. I don't get caught up in the brush near the shore. I don't let fallen trees and branches catch me or puncture me. Here I'm using my wits and senses to navigate, to stay in the flow, to continue my journey. I'm exploring the river as I go, getting to know its temperament and special qualities every day. I watch the shoreline, noticing the wildlife, enjoying the ducks, deer, herons, and eagles that live and thrive here. And every day the river brings me new experiences. I live for adventure, for I have nothing to cling to, nothing to defend, no investments or possessions to guard. I am free, and this comes from a very deep place of seeing and choosing. I am free. I transmute what would have been fear into excitement for the journey, and the child within rejoices. For both of us have returned to a place of curiosity and playfulness, while at the same time honoring the impulses toward maturity. As I learn to navigate the uncertainties of the river, I continue to feel its incessant pull. As I respond to the pull, I learn to listen more closely to the subtle voice of the river. More and more, we are becoming one. Any idea of a goal has simply dissolved in the water that is all around me. Now I watch, I feel, and I move into harmony with what is inside and with what is outside. There is no paradox, for every day I reach a confluence with other tributaries of experience. They all become absorbed by the river, and its movement and its sacredness and its greatness. Ever flowing, ever growing, ever knowing, now I smell the salt on the breeze. I spy a phalanx of gulls in the distance. Soon the river will meet the sea, but before I can draw conclusions, the voice of the river whispers, "This journey is never ending."
That's a poem that is in Tiger's book. Its book is titled "Walk in Beauty," and it's our tonight has been a discussion with Tiger Windwalker. Tell everybody your website too, Tiger.
Yeah, if you want to visit my website, you go to tigerwindwalker.com. Just one word, tigerwindwalker.com. There's, you know, biographical information there, poems, and then a place called the blog. If you go on the blog, you can read poems from the book, and you just go down to the bottom of the page, and it'll say older posts. Just click on that. You could read more poems, and most of the poems in the book are in the blog. And if you wish to contact me, you can contact me at tiger@tigerwindwalker.com.
Very good. Well, it's always a great amount of fun when we get together and talk. I feel blessed to be able to hang out with you a little bit, both at the beginning of your adventure, just before you took off for Hawaii, and now tonight when you got back. What do you want to leave us with tonight?
Here's another shorty. It's very, very pithy. Called Extraordinary. Stream of consciousness swirling along. I dance through life, my movement a song. I surrender to the river, jumping into the stream, leaving judgments behind. It's really more than it seems. Carry me farther and farther into my eternal flowing soul. This endless journey sustaining, I give up the need for a goal. Swimming in these waters, I have released caution and regret. I feel a sense of excitement for that which is not yet.
That's a lovely one. Again, you can find Tiger's poetry. It is currently out there. It's available. You do a search for Walk in Beauty, or you can go to Tiger's site, tigerwindwalker.com. And I gotta update the website, but I'll have some links up, and I'll have this interview archived in the next few weeks. And you can find show archives at ncrising.com, www.ncrising.com. One other thing I want to mention really quickly, it kind of relates to some of the things we were talking about tonight. It's another celestial alignment which is developing right now. The next time you're out about this time of night and it's clear, look up. And towards the center of the sky, if you're looking with your body facing south, if you look straight up, you'll see a little bit in front of Leo, you'll see Mars. And that'll be on the right side of the midheaven. On the left side of the midheaven, the bright yellowish object that's a little behind Leo, so on your left, that's Saturn. And these two are coming together. We're going to have a Saturn-Mars conjunction. That's going to be in about very first week or two of August. And Venus is going to be there as well. Venus is going to conjoin. So it's something you can watch developing. I love these things when you can actually see them. Venus is now up in the evening sky. If you look for it, you can see that bright object up there. You got another quick thing here?
Just a quickie to end on a lighter note. Anyone who resides in heaven, in the very least, deserves a partial ocean view.
So that's what we'll leave you with tonight. Stay tuned now, please, for Larry Grant with his program, Till Morning Come. And Larry's going to have some great music for you tonight, I'm sure. And I'll be back next Tuesday night at 11 p.m. with the next Vibrational Voyage program. God bless, and I hope you have a really lovely week. See you soon. You're listening to KKUP Cupertino.